This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. At Grant H. Paulson for me, at Funny Danny for DR. Want to hit us up on Twitter. Thanks to Byron for the update. Thanks to all of you listening. 106.7 around D.C. Odyssey all over the country. Our Richmond audience, 9:10 a.m., 105.1 FM. We appreciate it. This is a story I wanted to just mention before we get to the 5 at 5. It's developing in Major League Baseball right now. Pretty crazy. 5 Yankees coaches have been diagnosed with COVID. All of them, according to John Heyman, if his reporting is right, have been vaccinated and tested positive for COVID. Most of them are asymptomatic. No players are known to have any COVID at this point. Their game this evening is right now up in the air. The Yankees are one of the teams that has actually reached the threshold.
The 85% threshold, yeah.
If 85% of your personnel and your players get vaccinated, you get to have looser restrictions. You know, you can have people over to the hotel, or you can maybe go out to eat, you know, whatever the little things are. And a lot of teams haven't gotten there and aren't going to get there because players, people with the team are not getting the vaccine to the extent that 85%, the threshold that needs to be met, isn't being hit. So because of that, you know, a lot of teams are still in the same level of restriction of how often you got to wear masks and things like that. Long story short, supposedly, again, if Heyman's reporting is correct here, the 5 Yankees coaches who tested positive for the vaccine, COVID, have been vaccinated. And, you know, I think people know by now, we don't have to get into all the specifics, but just looking up the CDC guidelines, studies show that COVID-19 vaccines are effective at keeping you from getting COVID-19. Getting a COVID-19 vaccine will also keep you from getting seriously ill if you do get it. It's not 100%, I don't think, that you can't get it again. After you get vaccinated, you can still get COVID. It lowers the chances considerably of that. And maybe more importantly, if you get it, it keeps you from getting really, really sick, ideally.
That's the key. Yeah, there have been, you know, to my knowledge, if it's a kind of one hand, the number of hospitalizations, deaths, et cetera, once someone has been vaccinated due to COVID. So it is still certainly possible that you could test positive for it if there's still routine testing. But as the tweet says, asymptomatic, which means I got it. My body's already fought it off. I've got no issues or no problems from it. I'm just sort of here. So it is an interesting thing. So they are monitoring it. They're trying to nip it in the bud, make sure those guys that aren't part of that 85% don't actually get sick, and you kind of stop it with some action. That's why they're still testing.
I will be curious to see how they handle this, though, because this is a team at the 85% threshold.
Right.
That is almost all been vaccinated. And this is, you know, a coaching staff, if they're not able to participate, clearly having a game becomes difficult. But if people are asymptomatic and vaccinated that are playing that don't have COVID, I wonder if you just move the coaching staff to the side and you keep going, you call up a coaching staff from the minors, or what they would do in this case. Or do you just not have a game tonight, you push it back a day and figure it all out tomorrow? Meanwhile, the Padres, it sounds like, are dealing with some type of breakout of their own. A Padres player who had been at least partially vaccinated tested positive for COVID-19 late last month. So that means maybe they had one of the 2 shots. Mm-hmm. Maybe they weren't the 2 weeks out that you need to be fully vaccinated. Today, the Padres placed Fernando Tatis Jr., Jerickson Profar, and Jorge Mateo on the injured list due to health and safety protocols. At least one player, and they're not going to tell you who, has tested positive. So if you think we're out of the woods, we're not yet.
I mean, it's. I think the latest data I saw was sub 1% of even people being able to test positive after you've been fully vaccinated. It's statistically not very many. And
right.
Here we are, five Yankee coaches, it sounds like.
They're
crazy.
Doing thousands of tests in baseball
Yeah. Day
in and day out. So, you know, we'll hear this and everyone will be up in arms and think it's crazy. But five coaches and, you know, a player maybe who was partially vaccinated. But I'll also, you know, I want to hear more about the reporting that went into this too. To see, I mean, they're vaccinated. Okay. Are they 2 weeks out and they've had both of their shots? Have they had a shot? Did they just get their second shot a week ago? Like, I don't know.
Right.
But I'd be curious to get more intel on that. But something that's developing in baseball that we wanted to pass along. Right now it is time for our 5 at 5 on Grant and Danny. More like a 6 at 5 after that update.
Right.
Oh, man.
Come on.
This
Here we
time,
go.
Me. Wave Soda's awesome, super simple, bubbly water, splash of real juice, little caffeine. It's unsweetened. Wave Soda's got no stevia or artificial sweeteners. It's got a clean finish. 2 to 6 grams of sugar, 15 to 25 calories per can. Order now, wavesoda.com. Get 15% off with our promo code, either of our names, Grant or Danny, 15% off. Number one, where else would we start? Russell Westbrook. Chase is over. History has been made. Broke Oscar Robertson's triple-double record. Westbrook on how much he loved Robertson.
As a player in this league and to make it in this league, it's one thing. But to be in this league and consistently do great things and try to do great things, it's tough to do. And the ones before me understand what that's like, understand what that entails, understand the sacrifices, understand it. The time and energy it takes to be great. And, you know, guys like AI and Oscar, Magic, you know, like I said, the list can go on, understanding and being grateful. Like I said the other day, I'm super grateful for, especially for Oscar, because he paved the way for guys like myself. He endured different things back in the time where he was playing, where he was able to do that and still be effective on the floor, and not just that, he changed the game for guys like myself.
100% right. I love Westbrook's perspective on it. I love his sort of sense of history and understanding the company that he's in now, having put up this incredible record 182 times. He's ended up with a triple-double, and it's not just empty calories. These are meaningful buckets. These are, you know, games this team needs to win. He's been outstanding here down the stretch, and they've needed every one of those rebounds, points, assists, the steals, the big block to close out a game the other night against Indiana. He has been a dynamo. He just needs some of these guys to run with him and guard somebody a little bit, and they can make some noise in the postseason.
I don't know that they will make noise in the postseason, but you're right when you say they can. It's going to take healthy Brad Beal, Westbrook on top of his game, and then a couple of these role guys who have been huge for them lately playing at that level. We have seen Robin Lopez play his best basketball in the last few weeks. We've seen Daniel Gafford be instrumental in turning them around defensively as a rim protector since he came over. We have seen some huge three-point shooting performances from Davis Bertans, and I love the way Hal Netto's playing. Speaking of Netto, number two in our 5 at 5, he was on the show today. If you missed our short and sweet little interview with Hal Netto in our first hour on Russell Westbrook, you can grab the podcast. He spoke about the nightly impact Westbrook has and just how impressive he is to even his teammates playing at the highest level.
It shows his talent, his love for the game, his intensity, his competitiveness. I think everything. You add everything as to a basketball player that a basketball player needs to have to win games and to be competitive, and that's Russ, you know, and the numbers just show that. It's very impressive. I think seeing every night, I don't get used to it. Every night we look at the scoreboard and we see in two quarters, he's almost got a triple-double. I think it's incredible, something that people that follow basketball, it's once in a 30, 40 years, you know. So I'm really enjoying this season, enjoying playing with him this year.
I've always liked Neto's game from afar. This is the quintessential backup point guard in this league, right? Where your job is to get people in the offense, et cetera, but basically come in for 15, 20 minutes a night and be a pain in the ass. Just be a pain to the other team. Get deflections. use your fouls, no easy shots, get back on defense, share the basketball, and that's what Neto has done. He stepped into a starting role, started 21 games, started last night without Bradley Beal, and has knocked down some big shots for this club, has gotten some important moments there, and he's going to be a key role player down the stretch for this team as well into the postseason. But again, just on his perspective on Westbrook, guys in this league understand. This is just such rarefied air that we're seeing. And there are a bunch of unicorns now, right? Where Luka Doncic does what he does. Ben Simmons does what he does at 6'9", handling the basketball like he's Magic Johnson. He can't shoot a lick, but who cares? We're finding ways, new and cooler ways in this positionless era to have some really amazing, gaudy, eye-popping numbers occur.
I just loved that Neto said, I go out there and I give everything I've got and I pour it all out on the floor and I look up.
Yeah.
At the end of the game, and I got 12 points rebounds. It's just funny to think about.
I know, right?
Now, obviously, Russell Westbrook's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and Hal Neto is not. But that's a guy internationally who is a terrific basketball talent and is in the 99th percentile on planet Earth and playing this game. And his point is, it almost takes being a great player to properly understand what Westbrook's doing. Like, a guy like me who just watches dudes play probably can't even really grasp how amazing it is.
Yep.
You need to be a Neto. You need to be a Kent Bazemore.
Just hanging on in the league, dude.
Just a dude that's there playing a role to get how cool it is what Westbrook just pulled off. 5-5 on Grant and Danny. Let's go to the ice. Number 3, Caps and Bruins. Matchup is set. Not for tonight. I'm not talking about tonight. That's happening too. And maybe the least interesting or excited regular season game that'll ever happen. Bruins are sending a taxi squad of AHLers to take on the Capitals. Joe Beninati was with us today. Says the Bruins are really healthy, the Capitals are not, and this matchup could be difficult.
The Caps' star players, top players, have been banged up in the last couple of weeks, while Boston is just about at completely, total good health. It's amazing. They went through their adversity, too. Both of these teams have had to battle through it. But right now, Boston looks as formidable as any team in this division. And they can do it from top to bottom, offensively, defensively. They are super deep in goal. They're going to play Swayman tonight. I'm guessing we'll see both Swayman and Vladar. But Swayman is a guy who's pushing Halak and Rask for playing time. It's going to be Tuukka Rask on Saturday, you'd imagine. But everywhere you point at Boston, you can point to depth and quality, talented depth. This is going to be a difficult assignment.
I can sort of do like kind of a, I don't know if we call it like a meme or a GIF or a GIF, whatever you want to call it. Basically, I can just say a name and put my palms up because I don't know. Samsonov, Kuznetsov, Oshie. I just don't know. I just don't know. I just want everyone to be okay. I want to see what we got against this really good Boston club at full strength. So hopefully there's a little bit of rest time here. You've got a few days with the finale here this evening to try to get yourself right. But I'm just hoping that we see some of these guys that are instrumental to what the Capitals do, and they need them in order to get past the Bruins, let alone have a deep run.
I just need them to be able to give their best shot. They were built this year in a way that I think they were good enough to go on a deep run and win, and that's still the case if they're healthy. They also have a coaching staff this time around, they didn't last year in my opinion, that will allow them to go on a run to the Stanley Cup. I think Peter Laviolette, who has won a cup, who has been to the cup multiple times, who has taken teams in year one, year two, deep into the postseason in stops, I think it's all kind of there for them. If they can put their best foot forward, are they going to be able to? Oshie going to be there? I don't know. It looks like Carlson and Backstrom and Ovechkin are all going to play come Saturday night game one. Who knows? All three could be on the ice a little bit tonight. But does that mean they're 100%? I'm nervous. I don't love the matchup. I don't feel great about it. But I'll feel a lot better if I see Ovechkin, Carlson, Backstrom skate throughout the game tonight without any issues, assuming they're playing. Number 4, 5-5. We were talking about this just a few minutes ago. The Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay Packers, romance gone awry. Davante Adams, Fox Sports Radio and Fox Sports 1, I believe, with Cowherd talking about if Rodgers leaves the Packers, what it would mean for him.
I mean, that's my guy. That's the only guy that I've had, other than that 2017 season when he got hurt. It's the only guy that I played with. And, we built up a special connection over the years that has made it, put us both in really good positions in our career. Not that he needed me to come along for it because he was already in that spot, but we established a lot together. So, it would change a lot, man. You know, doesn't mean potentially I'd be gone, but, you know, I'd definitely have to do some extra thinking if my guy wasn't here.
Yeah. With all due respect to Brett Hundley, remember when that was a thing? That's Aaron Rodgers. Everybody gets this. If you have him, you're a contender. If you don't, oh my God, you're in the abyss. You know what the abyss looks like? Washington, Chicago, Cleveland before Baker Mayfield. That's what the abyss looks like. You never want to go to the abyss. Players know. They look at the other cities that are there. They don't want to go there.
You know what happened today? Jordan Zimmerman said goodbye.
Yes, he did.
Retiring from Major League Baseball. You know we got to shout out Jay Zim, number 5 in our 5-5. He threw the first no-hitter in Nationals history. They let him walk. His career after that slowly kind of unraveled, first in Detroit, and then he bounced around, was pitching this season. Didn't like how it felt and didn't like the lack of success, I suppose, so he's hanging him up. But before Jordan Zimmerman went to Detroit, he was a front-of-the-rotation, legitimate, certified stud for the Nationals. Final regular season game, 2014. Charlie Slows on the call, September 28th, 2014. The first Nats pitcher to throw a no-no. Before there was Max, there was Jay Zim.
All on their feet, all around Nationals Park. The 2-1 pitch, line to left center field. Souza moving over. Can he get there? He makes a diving catch! He makes a diving catch! He holds on! It's a no-hitter! It's a no-hitter for Jordan Zimmerman! What a play by Souza to end the game! And clinch a no-hitter for Zimmerman! And it's a mob scene up the third baseline! They poured Gatorade on Zimmerman! The mob scene all out to shortstop now! They come streaking out of the Nationals bullpen! It's unbelievable! An amazing Curly W in the books! Jordan Zimmerman has thrown the Washington Nationals' first no-hitter!
What a moment and what a year. How about 14-5 with a 2.66 ERA and just about 200 innings pitched? He was nails for this team. Remember, he was the hard luck loser for a couple years where he was, I think it was 8-11 with a 3.18 ERA one year. I think he had 12 wins with a sub-3 ERA. Finally caught his break in 2013 and finished top 5 in the Cy Young balloting, I think. In that season where he was 19-9. But just a workhorse, man. Just a no-frills grinder that flooded the zone and attacked you. Some really, really great moments from Jay Zim. Great career.
Two-time All-Star Jordan Zimmerman. Happy trails. Enjoy retirement. That's our 5-5 on Grant and Danny. SI looked at the 5 first-round quarterbacks and ranked them top to bottom in the way of who's going to have the best rookie season. So Danny told me not to peek at the story. I have not done so. I'm going to give you my rankings, and we will juxtapose mine versus theirs next. We got an update for you on a story we were just discussing.
It's a pretty big update.
So John Heyman reported about 50 minutes ago, the Yankees have 5 coaches with COVID, all have been vaccinated, word is. He just clarified during our commercial break. To clarify, only one Yankees coach is confirmed positive. Others are being tested and retested. It's a very big difference. 5 coaches have COVID, all vaccinated. Seems difficult to fathom, even though you can still get COVID after being vaccinated. And theoretically, the vaccination is going to make the effects less problematic.
Mm-hmm.
But he's now saying only one Yankees coach has been confirmed positive and the others are being tested and retested. So I'm now officially not going to be talking about this report anymore. That's my new stance on this. You get one shot, and if you botch it, now I'm not monitoring this until I get someone else with more information. John Heyman's very good at what he does. He's a great reporter, and he gets a lot of things right. For this moment, I'm just out on this.
I'll wait.
It's not about the Nationals. I don't need to talk about it, so I'm now good on this. I will just say this is one you got to get right the first time, because immediately when you talk about COVID and people with the vaccination who are failing tests, it's not just a baseball story.
Nope, there's a backdrop here.
There's a lot of people that want to scream and plant flags in the ground about being right or wrong, and you got two sides. So I just need you to, this is one, it's not his fault necessarily. Maybe someone gave him bad information. You just got to get that one right. This is not Justice Sheffield getting called up from the minor leagues.
Let's triple stamp the double stamp here. Let's be quite sure.
But I'm now going to wait. I will tell you that a buddy of mine in the big leagues texted me, and it's all they're talking about in their clubhouse is like, what are they going to do? Are they going to have to sit out now? Can you imagine if we're vaccinated and we still have to sit out if we test positive? I'm like, dude, I don't know anything. I'm just reading tweets that are being changed after they were originally reported.
Yeah, man. I mean,
but
as you said, there's a lot of gravity on that issue. This is not just a couple guys have the flu. A couple guys have a little bug that's going through. This is, you know, again, it's pretty significant. So I would say I would work really hard to make sure that first blow was right. Make sure my first crack at it was the right one. That's what I would endeavor to do.
But we're too late.
Here we are.
Now, hopefully the second one's
here
the right.
We are.
Second time's the charm. All right, so SI, am I giving credit to the right place?
Yes, indeed.
They ranked what exactly? What do you want me to do? You tell me what you need me to do.
I'm going to tell you. Let me read the paragraph. A little exposition up in here. All right. We're going to rank. This is from the SI article. We're going to rank each 2021 first rounder in terms of potential success in their rookie seasons, but put the weight where it should be on the shoulders of their organizations. We talk about this all the time. Building the nest. Right? Do guys have a chance to thrive, or is this very Cincinnati Bengals? Is this very Cleveland Browns drafting three quarterbacks in 4 years? What's it going to be like? We'll assign each player a potential success score, or a PSS, based on factors that will average below. Who really has the best chance at reaching their full potential in 2021? They are ranked by 1 to 10 scale, surrounding weapons, coaching prowess, organizational health, and offensive line.
Okay.
Those are your four criteria. 1 through 5, your first-round rookie QBs, were ranked according to their situations for the best chance for them to be successful based on their situations.
So I'm going to give you my guess at what they said.
Okay.
Is the ranking 1 to 5 of the quarterbacks from this year's first round in order of who will have the most success this season to the least when they play?
Yes. Based on, it's not about their skill set. It's about their situation that
Understood.
They're in.
Understood.
Yes.
So I have one more question at risk of asking too many questions before I give you my answer.
I'm not upset with you. Ask away.
I think it's very likely that Trey Lance barely plays this year. Does that mean I should slot him at the bottom because he's not going to play a whole lot? Because I would put him near the top of the list if I'm just talking about when he plays, what will he look like? You get what I'm asking?
I smell exactly what you're cooking. Based on their criteria here.
Yeah.
This isn't necessarily about, hey, he's got Jimmy G ahead of him, or there's a journeyman ahead of him. This is weapons, coaching, organization, offensive line.
All right, so here's the list.
Yeah.
They're going to put Trey Lance number one, in my opinion, if they're smart. Kyle Shanahan is a tremendous quarterback whisperer. He is a head coach and a play caller who will put his quarterback in a situation where the QB can thrive. He's done it throughout his career. You've seen Matt Ryan win an MVP. You saw Brian Hoyer play like a really good quarterback. He is going to get the most out of that position, and he's going to get receivers open. So he's going to be number one.
Grant Paulson, you are correct. 1 for 1. Trey Lance, number one.
Number two, they're going to say is Trevor Lawrence. And they're going to say Trevor Lawrence for the same reason I would put him number two, which is he is playing for a guy that has been successful everywhere. Whatever you think of Urban Meyer, that doesn't always mean he doesn't leave wreckage in his wake when he leaves a place. But he's won everywhere. He builds programs. He builds a culture, a football-first culture. He is comfortable on that offensive huddle because they just drafted his best buddy from Clemson, Travis Etienne, to catch the ball to the backfield. They also have a 1,000-yard back in James Robinson. They're going to be able to run the ball with him and Carlos Hyde. They have good receivers. DJ Chark is one of the most underrated players in the league. They signed Marvin Jones from Detroit. They still have Laviska Shenault, who's a sophomore, was a second-round pick last year, who I think can play. They got some speed with Philip Dorsett. They drafted Colin Johnson, who I liked at Texas in the 5th round last year. They got weapons all over the place. Tight end situation isn't great. I think they drafted Luke Farrell in the 5th round this year. They could do better there. But overall, weapons, offense, maybe low expectations. I like where kind of the floor is going to be for Lawrence this year.
Trevor Lawrence was not second on this list. He was not second. He was 3rd on this list. Trevor Lawrence was third.
All right, number three on my list is Mac Jones of the New England Patriots.
So Mac Jones was second on this one.
Okay, so we're all right so far, two out of three. The reason, the argument I'll make for Jones having a good season, first and foremost, when you think about weapons, people forget how much the Patriots did in free agency. Now, obviously, Sports Illustrated didn't if they're putting him number two. But you start with the head coach, Bill Belichick,
pretty
the greatest
good.
Coach who's ever lived.
Yeah.
You've also got an offensive coordinator, even though he's been a bit of a maniac as a head coach, and Josh McDaniels, and he's done some quirky things that lead you to believe maybe he might not get a job again. He can coach offense.
Mm-hmm.
I've told this story on the air a bunch of times in the past, but I'll tell it one more time. I was talking to McVay on the phone about a year ago or a year and a half ago, and I asked him who are the best, like other, I said, take yourself out of the equation. Not that he's an egomaniac and would have said himself. I said, but who are the best OCs, like play caller designers in the league? And he named Kyle Shanahan and Andy Reid without thinking about it. And I'm pretty sure the next guy he said was Josh McDaniels. He loves Josh McDaniels' stuff that he runs. So that's good for Mac Jones. I also think he gets on the field quickly because Cam Newton can't throw anymore. They can run the ball and do. Damian Harris, pretty good. They have James White who can catch the ball to the backfield. Sony Michel still. And at the receiver position, they signed Kendrick Bourne from San Francisco. They brought in Nelson Agholor, had a huge year with the Raiders. They brought in Jacoby Myers in free agency in 2019 as an undrafted player who's become pretty good. Three good wide receivers. At tight end, they signed Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry.
This is the thing they did.
1-2 punch. If you're Mac Jones, you're throwing to two of the top seven or eight best pass-catching tight ends in football. So I get it if they want to put him second. That makes perfect sense to me. And just going through the weapons now, looking at it on the depth chart, maybe it is a better situation than Trevor Lawrence had.
So their weapons are ranked a bit lower. This is really about coaching prowess, organizational health. We're talking about 1 year where they went 8-8, and that's a disaster for them in New England. And we're like, what are they going to do?
Part of that health is Tom Brady, though. I mean, he ain't walking back through that door.
Totally true. But a big part of it is, you know, pretty stable Belichickian type group there. So there you got 1 through 3.
All right. Four on my, this is my guess for their fourth. I think you got to go Wilson over Fields. I'm putting Zach Wilson 4, Justin Fields 5.
Fields 4, Wilson 5.
See, I think that's just wrong. I'm shocked by that. Here's why I would argue for Wilson 4. Number one, the Jets have better players on offense now than people think. They traded back up into the first round. They got Elijah Vera Tucker, who's going to start at left guard. At left tackle, they got a beast in Mekhi Becton. Remember they took him
last year, right? Or 2019.
No, that was last year, 2020. So they have Becton and Vera Tucker on the left side to protect his blind side. Pretty good offensive line overall. George Fant is still their starting right tackle. He used to play for the Seahawks. I don't love their running game, and they still need to get better at running the ball. I'm guessing they'll turn things over to LaMichael Perine now that Frank Gore is out. Ty Johnson did some things at the end of last season, who looks like he can play. But receiving core is much upgraded. Don't sleep. They signed Corey Davis from the Titans, who's a baller. They brought in Keelan Cole from the Jaguars to provide depth. They got Denzel Mims, who's a second-round pick with speed, who they drafted last year. Jamison Crowder is still in the slot. They just drafted Elijah Moore, who I loved in the second round this year out of Ole Miss. So there's weapons all over the place for Zach Wilson. And while I understand they went defensive-minded with their head coach, Robert Saleh, Mike LaFleur is their OC, studied under Kyle Shanahan, brother of Matt LaFleur, same kind of Shanahan coaching tree. He actually wasn't in Washington with all those guys. I remember talking to Matty about his little brother, was coaching at like the D3 level, which is kind of funny now.
Amazing.
Offensive coordinator of the Jets. But I would put him over Fields, and here's why. Fields, in my opinion, this is less about 2021, more about like big picture stuff. But to me, your coach and your GM are desperate.
Yeah,
they are
brand new in 22.
Exactly. You're going to have a new head coach. You're going to have a new GM in 2022. That does not work. So I don't know what to tell you, man, other than I would not want to be Justin Fields next year. Now, maybe they're saying in 2021 it could be okay.
So the case there is Allen Robinson plays in Chicago. That's going to help anybody, right? He's really good. I think Anthony Miller is a upside wide receiver number two with a great skill set that they underutilize a little bit. David Montgomery rushed really well down the stretch last year for Chicago. They drafted Tevin Jenkins at the top of round two. Decent offensive line. I think that graded a little bit better than the Jets at this point. I'm not sure why, because I actually would probably take the Jets offensive line just sort of sight unseen without doing any kind of deep evaluation there. But it's not really enough to maybe push it over the top, but it's not as if Chicago's got a collection of stiffs on that side of the football.
I'm not saying they got stiffs, but look, I can make an argument for the one season, if he got on the field, that he would be fine. I just think if we're doing a long-term who's best off, who's worst off based on where they got drafted, he's by far in the worst shape. That's got Haskins to me written all over.
Yeah.
You get inherited by a new head coach, which I think they will have, or a new front office.
That's always hard,
which,
man.
I think they will have.
Yeah.
You're not their guy. How many quarterbacks who's not a team's guy, how many quarterbacks end up making that front office or that coach believe? Very few. They just go find someone else that they like better, that they handpick.
Mm-hmm.
Stop. Like that
basically, the watch starts. You know, the timing, the hourglass starts the instant a new guy
comes
in.
That's actually why, this is a bit of a hot take, to be frank. If I was the owner of the Bears, I would have told Pace no when he tried to trade up to get him. Because you're a lame duck. That, you know, you may not get fired, but there's a good chance that you might. We've seen this here too many times. Like, yeah. You don't pick a quarterback at the end of a regime to hand to the next regime. I would not have allowed that trade up, because unless you're going to commit to multiple years of these guys, these Ham and Eggers staying there.
Or beyond that, just thinking out loud, if you're like, well, Fields is so legit that it transcends staffs and regimes, you know, that remains to be
possibly
seen. But again, it's just such a hard situation to walk into.
If you guys want to react to any of that, how would you rank the five first-round quarterbacks in terms of likeliness to thrive this year? Whose situation do you like best? Whose do you like worst? We're Grant and Danny on the Fan. Grant and Danny on the Fan, ranking in SI of the quarterbacks taken in the first round this year, most likely to hit the ground sprinting with success, not based on themselves, but just based on supporting cast. They put Trey Lance number one, Mac Jones of the Patriots second, Trevor Lawrence Jaguars third, they had Justin Fields Bears fourth, and Zach Wilson Jets fifth. I would have changed the rankings a little bit, but long-term, I love the Lance situation most. I think Lawrence in Jacksonville is going to be fine. Wilson with the Jets, you're trying to overcome
a lot
of years of ineptitude, a la Washington, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
You would almost bet against a early first-round quarterback going to the football team just because it's been 30-plus years of hunting for a quarterback, and it's been the reverse car wash. You come here, you leave dirtier than when you drove into the thing. But they do have a new head coach in Saleh, who everyone seems to like. They do have a sharp, young offensive coaching staff. They're not led by Adam Gase. And they had a heck of an offseason where they added a lot of pieces, spent a lot of money. Let's go to Nathan in Centerville, who wants to hop in. What's up, Nate? How are you?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Hey, buddy.
Great.
Hey, so, yeah, you know, Trey Lance, I think, does have a lot around him. I said, you know, to the screener, Trevor Lawrence, that he's, you know, the best quarterback in the class. Chark is good. He's got his college running back. He's got James Robinson there from last year. Shane Ault isn't too shabby. He's got Danny's boy, Tebow, to be the next Gronk. So he's got a good shot. I think
zing.
Mac Jones probably is going to have
the... That's a good zing.
You think he's doing a bit?
Yeah, I do.
All right, good.
I think Jones is going to struggle a bit. New England added Jonnu and Henry, but, you know, we saw Cam Newton kind of struggle there. They didn't really do much weapons-wise, and I think Mac Jones, out of the five first-rounders, kind of has the weakest skill set in terms of, you know, athleticism, do-it-yourself off script or arm. And then sneaky, I think that if Kirk Cousins gets off to a slow start and they do decide to go with Kellen Mond up in Minnesota to see what they have maybe a few weeks in, with the weapons around him and his he's got a big arm and his athletic ability, he might be able to kind of come in and shock the league, maybe not long term for, you know, a decade, but for this year, absolutely.
Appreciate you,
interesting,
buddy. So a couple of things. I can't see Mon getting on the field early this season. What I think there is, I could see them trading Cousins at the end of this year if they don't win a couple playoff games or something like that.
Uh-huh.
and prepare for, you know, whatever's after Cousins with Mon taking over.
Doesn't he has 1 year after this one, right, on that deal, I think?
I think there's two seasons left
yeah.
this one. So if they win a playoff game or two, you keep him around. If not, then maybe you flip him, and there's going to be a market. You know, how many teams we saw this year looking for a veteran starting quarterback? Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of the plan with Mon, because Cousins has played well. As far as the other guys, though, so I'm interested in this idea of – and great zing on Tim Tebow, for the record.
Yeah, tip of the cap.
Anything you want to throw out as Danny loving Tim Tebow, I'm here for. I don't know about the Mac Jones. He's right about all the physical trait stuff that he doesn't have.
Yep.
If he can't play well in New England this year, I'll be a little bit surprised.
See, I feel like he's going to have the best rookie year.
I could see it because he's like, oh, I don't know about the weapons. Did anyone see how Nelson Aguilar played for the Raiders last year? I don't know his numbers off the top of my head. I'm pretty sure he went for 1,000 yards, though.
Close to it, I think.
I'll bet you he was 70 catches and 1,000 yards. Will you look that up?
Yep.
He made so many deep catches, so much speed, left his problems where he dropped everything in Philadelphia. That's a burner.
896. 48 catches, 896.
Okay, so I was nowhere near 70 and 1,000. But he had a huge year. What was it, 18 per?
Eight touchdowns,
like
yeah.
That.
Almost 19 per catch.
So
down the field.
I think as a vertical threat in that offense, with Myers kind of running some of the intermediate stuff.
It's about those two tight ends, man.
And you got those two. We've seen what it looks like. They had Gronk and they had Aaron Hernandez at one point in time, and they ran the offense through two tight ends, and I think they're going to do that again.
Yeah, they're basically going to say, if you play nickel against us, we'll run it down your throat. If you don't, these guys will kick your butt. I think both those guys are going to be north of, you know, 600-700 yards, 800 yards receiving. You have your deep threat there as well. And you mentioned McDaniels. I think it's a good fit.
Is it weird to you that they have two polar opposite quarterbacks, though? Like, if you're McDaniels as a play caller, offense designer, Cam Newton, it's a lot of designed runs, especially down by the goal line. But he doesn't throw that well anymore and is a physical back, so to speak. I mean, that's kind of what they use him as in the red zone. Jones is whatever the opposite of that is. The ball's got to come out of his hands fast. You're going to have to just kind of throw the ball short and intermediate, I would think. Generally, you draft a guy similar to what you have. They went kind of zigged where they've
been zagging. The opposite, yeah. Because I think that's where they want to go. I think they want to do that. I think they want to do a guy that you don't think of as a world-class athlete in terms of athleticism, moving, creating. I don't think they care about that. I think they're going to be able to run the football. I think they like their offensive line. And this two tight end thing, they're trying to run it back. They're trying to run back the 2013-2014 Patriots again, where they were unstoppable.
If I'm looking at the five quarterbacks in this year's first round and trying to find the guy that has the best rookie year, you're saying Mac Jones?
Mac Jones is my answer.
I can't go Trey Lance because I don't think he's going to play enough, even though he has the best situation. I think he ends up maybe starting like six games. I do think they go to the playoffs. It's not like they're going to turn to him because they're bad. I think they turn to him and he's like making plays with his feet. I'll say Trevor Lawrence is my guy this season. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Stretch run of the show next. Furlong, Grant, and Danny on this Tuesday night, May 11th, 2021. NFL schedule releases tomorrow. Now, will you actually watch any of that? Because I know you're not excited about it. I am. I will watch. I'm jacked up. Will you find yourself in front of NFL Network for the release of the schedule tomorrow?
I don't think so. I think the Wizards play tomorrow night in a big one against Atlanta, so I'll be majoring in that, I think.
Are you still a one-screen guy?
No, but it won't necessarily occur to me to flip over to see what, like, I don't know, to see what the Carolina Panthers schedule is. You know, like, I just can't do it.
Okay, better question then.
Yeah.
I'm going to blame myself for the execution of that question. Washington football team schedule comes out 8 o'clock tomorrow. It's released at 7:59.
Mm-hmm.
How soon after that will you take your first glance at the WFT schedule?
Oh, really soon, because I'm sure people will tweet it, and it'll be on. You know, so I'll have my whatever kind of social media news type stuff on. But making a show out of it is not something I get. I don't quite get why we're doing that or how we do that or why it's that long and why it just couldn't be an email, you know?
I think I'm going to probably stream whatever the team does to release their schedule. So the polar opposite of whatever you're doing.
Okay.
So last year, I know that they had something, and it dragged on a little bit long for my liking, to be completely honest with you. But they had Matt McConaughey involved for some reason. There was a few other random people like that. But they did this big presentation to release the schedule, and Matt McConaughey was like a, if I remember correctly, he was doing like a four-minute interview with them, about not even a, really about football. They had John Barenthal involved for some reason as well, who I love.
He's awesome. DC
awesome
guy.
Awesome actor. I was pumped up the other day because he like favorited something I tweeted, and I thought, it's really cool.
All right, I got to do that now. I gotta like say something. You know what I love? Guys from Sidwell Friends that make it big in Hollywood at John Barenthal. See if I can get like a like.
He probably will.
Just
like
throw
that.
Some bait out there.
But those two guys were somehow involved in their like schedule release.
Yeah.
I didn't really understand what we were trying to do, but I watched the whole stream. I was in my kitchen. My wife and I were watching, and we were thinking like, oh, we'll go to a game. We had no idea that we'll never get to go to
that
a game.
That no one's going to any games.
That's not ever going to happen. So that was a waste of my time. This year will not be a waste of my time because I will go to a road game this year, and I will go to all the home games this year. So I'm going to be glued to it. But you have at least admitted that, like me, you're curious to see when the trip to Vegas is.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. I mean, I want to see the schedule. I'm in favor of learning what the schedule is. I'd like to know sooner rather than later. I just can't necessarily do a TV show about it where McConaughey's like, wait, they're going to be the Browns. We're going to go to Cleveland, man.
He doesn't release the schedule.
Like,
that's
what are we
actually
doing?
A great idea. If you're listening to me, Washington football team, get Matt McConaughey to actually – that's what they should have done. They just had a taped interview. I think Larry was still with the team at the time, and, like, he taped an interview with McConaughey.
To talk about the schedule or something?
It was, the interview had nothing to do with the schedule. It was just an interview with him on their special for the schedule. So it was like, when did you become a fan of the team?
And that is weird.
You met Dan Snyder this time. What'd you think of him? Like, that was kind of the interview.
I hope it's a later bye week. You know, like, what? Why?
I would love for him to actually announce week by week who they're playing. Little factoids and anecdotes about the matchup.
Here comes Russell Wilson. It's the Seahawks. It's a home game.
That would be
he's just all into it.
So perfect. That or for some reason they could get John Gruden to announce the schedule. Knock on wood if you're with me.
So impractical, man. I'm a coach of another football team announcing a home game for Washington. That doesn't make any sense, man.
Is he an R for Washington guy?
I just threw it in there. Just give it a little color. A little color.
I don't think Jay Gruden would answer that call if they wanted him.
Probably not. I'm busy.
Oh, we were talking about Jordan Zimmerman announcing his retirement. He threw the first no-hitter in Nationals Park history. We played the highlight earlier, which was just such a great call from Charlie on a diving stop by Steven Souza.
What a moment.
So two things I wanted to bring up about that. Number one, we don't talk about Steven Souza enough in this town. Steven Souza deserves respect and reverence. Souza, in addition to making that diving catch in the gap.
What else did he bring us?
Jordan Zimmerman's no-hitter hand-delivered by Souza to the Nationals fan base. You never would have had that memory without that guy tracking that ball. Souza, in one of the greatest thefts in the history of trades, was the guy Mike Rizzo added into a three-team deal to bring back Trey Turner and Joe Ross.
Mike Rizzo minding his business, right? Maybe he's about to eat some lunch. Maybe he's going to have a snack. Maybe he's watching another game on MLB Network, just hanging out. Hey, Mike, could you throw Steven Souza in a deal? You're going to end up with Trey Turner, who we can't trade for a couple months because we just drafted him just outside of the top 10, and this Ross guy, whose older brother's already in the bigs. Okay, bam, deal's done. A guy we don't need at all, who's not part of our future plans.
The day that trade was made, just a guy sitting on his couch over here, me. And I happen to do a baseball show about prospects on MLB Network Radio. So I know minor league players. I've interviewed Trey Turner when he was at NC State. I mean, I guess I knew him a little bit more than the average person. But I just couldn't believe that was possible. That Mike Rizzo could throw Souza, not a great prospect, former third-round pick back in 2007.
He's got a 30-homer season to his name.
He does, in a year in which I think he hit about .229.
That's correct.
But yes, he did hit 30 homers 3 years after he got traded.
You know who's better? Trey Turner.
But Souza, 7 years after he was drafted, made the big leagues. Like, if you are a top prospect, that's not a thing that happens. And I'm not trying to joan on Steven Souza. Again, this is doesn't sound like it. This is a Steven Souza appreciation segment. The point of the dude's story is
that's right.
They traded him after 21 games, including that catch that we heard today on that no-hitter, ending the regular season in 2014 in his 21st game with the Nationals, and they got their shortstop of the next 7 years,
amazing,
Trey Turner, and Joe Ross, who has turned into, this year he's pitched well, you know, back of the rotation starter. At the time, they probably had higher hopes. I remember going to watch in his first home game against the Cubs. He struck out like 10 or 11 or something. Really good stuff.
It's some great moments, yeah.
Yeah, but that trade is one of the five best trades in DC sports history.
I would absolutely, even knowing what we know and going back then, would have said, we'll end up with Joe Ross for Steven Souza. I would have said, yeah, let's do that.
Of course you would have.
Let's do that. Now you add in Trey Turner.
Yeah.
MVP candidate. Now you add in Trey Turner, star
guy,
to that mix.
Here's what I'm trying to tell you. Steve Souza should be in the Nationals Ring of Fame or whatever they have.
Whatever. What do they do?
They have the DC Sports Hall of Fame over there. Like,
yeah.
It's like a tarp that hangs on a parking garage or something. It's actually a lot nicer than I just made it sound. There's a tarp on a parking garage, but it's like a big, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
But do the Nats have their own actual like Ring of Fame yet? Or they probably haven't been around long enough. Like their own Hall of Fame?
I don't know what they got.
So they
know that, actually.
They need to have something like that. And they need Steven Souza to be inducted with the first
with
class.
With that dive. Like, that's how he's doing it. That's how we remember him. And then there's the big notes. Steven Souza made that catch, but he also got his Trey Turner.
They do have the name. They do have some names around the, you know, like the 200 level
seats. Like some like Expos,
the old Senators.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I believe Jason Worth's name just went up there recently.
Did it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See, I'm sleeping on that.
Yeah.
What is that called?
I would imagine that'd be a Ring of Honor.
Nationals Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
I need Steve Souza in that Ring of Honor. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
San Diego is getting Will Myers out of the deal, right? That's who they were all horned up for. So they just wanted that. I don't know what Tampa was doing. I don't know what anybody was doing. I just know that Mike Rizzo's minding his business and he landed Trey Turner and Joe Ross.
What was Tampa doing?
I don't know. Tampa was tamping, man. Anybody that's good and might make $1.74, they're like, we got to get rid of this guy. We should hurry up and get rid of him because he's helpful.
Nuts.
Major league teams.
But we should make it a point to just bring up Steve Souza more often.
Occasionally.
Today it was easy to do because of the Jays in retirement.
So my memory of that, I had tickets to that game and I had to give them up because I was coming back from my buddy John's wedding. I was the best man at his wedding. And I'm driving home and as soon as we get enough signal, tuning in for basically the seventh inning on, all the great calls and all the great moments, and Yelich drills that ball to left field, left center field, and I'm going, that's going to be a base hit. It's going to get down. It's going to be over his head. He makes the catch and goes nuts, and it was just incredible.
Have you been to a no-hitter then?
No, I never have.
How about as a player playing in all the games you did?
I played in a perfect game.
What level?
Shenandoah Valley Wood Bat League.
Summer college ball.
Yeah, summer college ball.
But never been as a fan.
Never been as a fan.
MLB. Mm-mm. I haven't either.
So I was at that one of the Messina games, not the one where he gave it up in the ninth to Alomar at the Orioles, if you remember, years ago against the Indians. I think he had a no-no. I want to say
he went 8 1/3 one time.
Yeah, I want to say but I think that was that one. I was at a game where I think he went no-no through 7. And then gave up a couple hits and ended up a couple runs. But
for some reason, Minnesota sticks out to me.
That sounds right.
I'm just throwing that out there.
It could be right.
But he went deep into a game against the Twins. I remember sitting watching it at my house in King George as a kid wearing his Orioles gear. Yeah, I've never been to a no-hitter game. My best, closest kind of every pitch, the whole ballpark is hanging on it thing that I've been to, Max Scherzer's 20-strikeout game against the Tigers.
That's right. You were in the park for that
one. I still have my
tickets
to that. I was in the crowd. I was sitting in the second row in right center field, like in the outfield for that game. And it was freaking awesome. 20 punchies. It's happened, you know, 5 times.
Two or three times, 4 times, right? Yeah. I would say I have never been more nervous in my life than when that perfect game got through 4 innings. We got 5 to go. We're on defense. I'm like, if that ball is hit to me, I'm going to melt down.
Oh, I can't imagine.
I've never been so tight. A routine two-hopper. I was playing second base. A routine two-hopper. Room service. Like, it bounced high enough that where I could have just, you know, moved my glove in the most fundamental catch possible. I flubbed to such a high degree because I was so nervous about it. I like, hit my chest, bounced down in front of me, and I, like, made this frantic play to get the guy by half a step, and he was definitely out. but it was the easiest play in the world, and I made it seem like it was the most challenging. Like I was swallowing swords that were on fire.
Just in your head.
Oh, in my head so bad. But we did it.
I think about that all perfect the time game. On the 27th out.
Yeah.
Now we see no-hitters once a week in Major League Baseball. Right? But on these ground balls or just routine flyouts, a guy's parked under it.
Oh, panic.
What is going through his mind?
Joe Panic. At the disco.
It's one thing if, you know, and I feel like this in my life. If it's for myself, you can eventually get over it. Like, it's yourself. Or even if it's your direct family member or something, like, they'll eventually forgive you. If you're taking care of someone else, like, if I'm walking my dog, different than if I'm walking someone else's dog and something bad happens. Like, dog gets off the leash and is running away. My dog, worst case, it never comes back. I hate myself, but I'll figure it out. Someone else's dog runs away? You're ruining someone else's no-hitter in the field?
That's right.
That's tough, man.
So the kid that threw the no-hitter went to Maryland, and he's the guy that gave up, I think, 4 of the 6 homers that Marshall McDougal hit for Florida State at Maryland. You have any follow on that?
I don't know what you're talking
Back
about.
In the day, Marshall McDougal, who was like the prospect before all the prospects, and he was the most prospect ever, had a 6-home-run game Florida State played in conference at Maryland. And then that guy went on to throw a perfect game in that summer.
One other note. From a baseball standpoint, nationally. I don't know if you saw this today. The Oakland A's are starting to look at relocation. So they've been in this fight with Oakland for years and years and years. And we could be seeing a team move in Major League Baseball, according to Jeff Passan of ESPN. The A's have played in Oakland since 1968. They won a waterfront stadium in downtown Oakland at the Howard Terminal site, which I think is not far from where the Warriors and a bunch of other teams have kind of had their spots set up shop. After years of failed stadium plans and weeks after the organization asked for the city council to vote on a $12 billion mixed-use development before its late July summer recess, the long-anticipated specter of the A's looking into relocation became a reality today, according to Jeff Passan of ESPN. They might go to Vegas.
Yeah.
You know how I feel about this?
Mm-hmm.
More teams in Vegas. I think Vegas has proven with the Golden Knights and more recently with the Raiders, and they haven't even had a chance to have fans in the stands yet. Just look at that hockey puck of a stadium they've got indoors. Vegas can do it, man. I want more teams in Vegas.
So I remember these flirtations for years when D.C. was always kind of the bridesmaid, was always the nominee. I've seen these stories before, and you always try to distinguish how much of that is posturing, saying, we'll totally go. We're going to leave if we don't get the stadium. All right, we're leaving. Bye. You know, you wonder how much is that, how much of it is, hey, they're held back by the fact that they're in Oakland. They're held back by the fact that that stadium is a dump. They're held back by their market. They are. Oakland has to compete on a fraction of the budget of some of the other teams. I mean, you know, Moneyball was right on. I mean, that's kind of what they do. That's why Billy Beane invented what he did. That's why he went with the Bill James stuff. That's why they went with the least valued commodity in the sport to try to find a way to compete on an annual basis. And they've done an amazing job of that on a shoestring budget. But enough's enough. I think they're basically saying, we might go. And I actually think this one might be real.
I do, too. I definitely, and particularly, you've seen a team leave Oakland and go to Vegas and be received really, really well.
Yeah.
And get a brand new stadium, and it's gorgeous, and it's the talk of the sport. At the worst, just to flirt and say we're doing it, see what happens, but I could definitely see them leave. I just wonder, I mean, Vegas has been thrown out there, if there's other locations possibly where a major league team could end up, but I always try to put myself in the shoes of the fan that's losing the team.
Yeah.
If I'm a Raiders fan, I don't know how you move on. Like, you take away one of my teams that I watch every night, the Caps, the Nats.
You imagine?
Football team, Wiz, whatever. What heartbreak that would be. I mean, especially for kids. If I was 12 or 13 and a team left, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, it'd be the worst thing that happened to my child.
Yeah, that's over
my
for that sport.
My whole life was just living those teams. And if Oakland lost another team, 2 in a couple of years, you lose the Raiders. They're super passionate. They supported that team. They didn't lose the team because they didn't show up. They didn't lose the team because they didn't care. It's because they couldn't get a stadium.
Yeah.
And now the same thing's going to happen with the A's. They got a great fan base.
And they've got a pretty damn good history, too. They're not quite the Yankees or the Cardinals, but short of that, they've been pretty great for a long time. Number of World Series championships. You go back into the 70s, they had some great teams. And then the Bash Brothers era, I can't believe they only won one, by the way, when they had like 9 20-game winners. But that's a pretty good history there. That'd be a shame.
We were talking yesterday about Tim Tebow. The report is he's going to be signing with the Jacksonville Jaguars with his former college coach, Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer was on Chris Collinsworth's show on PFF.
Yeah, we have not signed Tim. There's a thought going around. You know, he was in the best shape of his life, asked to see if he could work out with a couple of our coaches. I wasn't even there. And they came back to me and said, wow, this guy's in incredible shape. And I said, then I went another time and watched him try him out. And they said, go work on these things. He comes back later. They try him out again. I'm not there. And they come in and they said, wow, you know, this guy's ball skills. He's a great athlete. He looks like he's 18 years old, not 20, whatever he is, 33. And I said, guys, you don't understand. Now, this guy is, you know, he's the most competitive maniac you're ever going to talk to. And let's give it a shot. And I have not decided if we're going to do that or not yet. I'm getting close. I got to make a decision here pretty soon.
So that's, again, Chris Collinsworth talking to Urban Meyer. To me, it sounds like he's trying to distance himself a little bit from just bringing in his buddy. Well, it wasn't me, you see.
I wasn't even there.
He worked out with the other coaches. I wasn't even there. Then I saw him and I said, hey, Tim.
That's a good point.
Then he was back and I wasn't there either. So the decision's got to be made. It'll be my decision, but I haven't made it yet. I took all that as there are people, and I don't understand these people, who are angry that Tim Tebow would get a shot at training camp when there are 90 spots, by the way. And like I heard Damon Amendolara from CBS Sports Radio on with Craig Hoffman on The Fan last night, and he was, I don't think it's overstated to say, he was livid about this. Like, he's really bothered that Tim Tebow is going to get an opportunity with the Jaguars because he thinks it's unfair to, like, all the other college free agent tight ends who might fill that spot. I think Urban Meyer, based on that reaction around the country, is being very clear in saying, and I don't believe him, this really isn't just me giving Tim Tebow an opportunity because he's my buddy. My coaching staff thinks this guy is worthy of it. So I think he's just doing his due diligence before he announces in a day or two that he's back. I have a hard time believing Schefter and all these guys are reporting that he's going to be at training camp if that hasn't already been determined between the Jags and Tebow's agent.
Yeah, and also, just by the way, to your point about the reaction, I've been a little bit taken aback. I'm not passionate about this either way. I just kind of marvel that Tebow could still be even considered for this, having not played since 2012. But that reaction that you mentioned from Amendolara and some others, I've seen that pulse out there, that people are very upset about this. And I kind of don't get that. This is the league of meritocracy. Like, that's what this league is about. They don't care. Nobody cares about anything. No, oh, you have a cool personal situation. Oh, you're an undrafted free agent. Oh, no one cares. If this guy can help us and move merchandise, sell tickets, whatever, he can help us, he'll get a chance. That's kind of the end.
Well, he'll definitely do the first couple things you just mentioned.
Right?
I don't know if he can play football, but he will sell some tickets in Jacksonville, in Duval. No doubt about that. And there will be extra cameras at training camp if you're into that kind of thing. And my guess is Urban Meyer is into that kind of thing. No Wizards game tonight. They're off. Got the sandwich day off between the two Hawks games last night and tomorrow. Russell Westbrook made history last night. 182 career triple-doubles, 28 points, 13 rebounds, 21 assists last evening.
Normally, I don't like to pat myself on the back, but tonight I will, just because, you know, I'm so grateful for the ones before me and so blessed and thankful for the man above for allowing me to go out and do what I do. And, you know, I take this job very seriously, and I'm super grateful for all my teammates and coaches along my journey thus far. And special thanks to my family, because they sacrificed so much of their time and energy away from me to allow me to do some of the things I'm able to do. You know, my wife, my kids, my mom, my dad, my brother, the sacrifices they have done is don't go unnoticed. And I'm just grateful for so many people. The list can go on. And, but I'm just appreciative of moments like this.
That was Westbrook post game. I hated that he pulled up for the three at the end of the game.
Same here.
He was incredible all game long. Just bad decision. I don't know how much legs he had left, frankly. But that, if you're going to take a three there, call timeout and draw something up.
Agreed.
I actually preferred them not do that. I wanted them to push it. That's what they do. That's the team that they've kind of become. But I just think you go to the cup, you try to draw contact, you kick to someone on the outside. For him to just pull up and take that three, that was a frustrating way for that historical night to end. Tough loss, 125-124. So of their last four losses over 17 games, three are by 1 point and the other's in overtime.
Yep.
They play the Hawks at 7 o'clock tomorrow in Atlanta again. They need that one.
Yeah, so whisper quiet. Indiana won last night, beat Cleveland. So
back
now
in
the
front of them.
Wizards are back in the 10th seed. Chicago, 2.5 games back with three to play. So you got to grab a couple of these wins. Maybe you could host Indiana. still an outside shot that you could catch Charlotte, who I believe they are a game and a half behind in the 8 seed.
Caps have their final regular season game tonight at 7 o'clock. Not really sure what to expect from this game. The Bruins, who will be the Caps opponent in round one, starting Saturday night, game one at Capital One Arena, set for 7:15 p.m. They're not going to play most of their key players tonight. Sounds like they're bringing an AHL squad to the arena in D.C. Caps are trying to get some minutes on ice, though, some TOI. Mm-hmm. They want some time for Ovechkin, Carlson, Backstrom. No TJ Oshie, presumably, but we'll have more answers, I think, this evening just based on how healthy those guys look going forward for the Capitals. Let's get to what we learned today on Grant and Danny. We always end the show this way. Never put Twinkies on your pizza. What we learned, driven by your local Honda dealer, race in for a great deal on the Honda of your dreams during the Honda Dream Garage Spring Event. Take advantage of the savings and see your local Honda dealer today.
This is very clearly what I learned today. Despite that presence of a very firm, powerful consonant at the start of the name, that R is pronounced H. It's Howell Neto. Not Raul Neto, Howell Neto. A guy that's been in the league, I think this is either his fifth or sixth year. I've not said his name right correctly once until today. Howell Neto.
It's amazing to me that you learned that today.
Learned it today.
Because every broadcast, Justin Kutcher, he couldn't make it more clear. He over howls. He howls like that.
And it's like, I don't really hear it because
Danny said
the
to me, he's like, Raul or Howell? I'm like, Howell Neto. He's like, okay. And and I said, you know, like they say on the broadcast, he's like, Raul. And I was like, have you ever watched a Wizards game? They say his name 100 times as that's literally how they do it. Right. They're like, ha.
They pant and then they say owl.
Exactly. Every time. So funny. I learned that we underuse Ryan Clary as a voice actor, our assistant producer.
You're right about that.
We need him to read more things on the show. He read Brad Beal's angry tweets at Kent Bazemore, and we need him to do that more often. Not necessarily Beal tweets. Hopefully Beal's just hanging 50 and not tweeting at people.
Angry tweets.
But we need him to read things on the show more often.
Passion.
If you missed Howell Neto or any part of the show, grantanddanny.com. Use the Odyssey app. Thanks to Darius and Ryan. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.